Sound of Hockey episode 284. We're calling this one the inaugural Kraken episode. Why are we calling it that, Curtis?
Well, we're calling it that because the inaugural Kraken gave up 284 goals against.
Is that good? Like, what's a good number?
What is a good number?
Lower than that. But I'm wondering, what makes me think about that is I wonder if that's a little inflated across the board because that was still a COVID year and you had like, is that when we had taxi squads and stuff, or was that
the
following
year? We did
have
taxi squads, yeah.
So I wonder, no, we didn't have taxi squads.
We did.
That was the year before, the inaugural.
There weren't taxi squads?
No. But there were a lot of COVID absences, so you'd think the quality of the players weren't as good because there's a wider range of players.
The reason I hesitated is that the team historically has been, the one thing they've done consistently over the years is suppress a shot quality against. But that year, I'm looking this up, the average goals against was 255. It was bad.
That was a bad team.
It was a bad team. If you recall, the goaltending struggled a bit.
Yeah. Unlike this season.
Unlike this season.
Which was a good team with, no, we don't want to say that. They were a team.
We'll get into it.
They were almost precisely in between the last 2 years.
They're a team. Famous.
This is, Pierre Dorion. Yeah. That was like early Sound of Hockey, pretty early Sound of Hockey days when he said that, and we were running with it for a bit.
Yeah.
Who is the player on the Senators that we always...
Mark Borowiecki.
Him, but there's another guy.
Sagarin?
Sabarin.
And there was a Sabarin sighting. I was watching some AHL over the weekend, and he was on one of the teams, but I almost sent you guys a picture of it, Sabarin.
That was a deep cut, very deep cut.
But he's still playing hockey, I guess. That's the most important thing here.
That is important. This is Sound of Hockey. I am Darren Brown, at Darren Fun Brown on the X, joined as always by John Barr. Hello, John.
Hello, everybody. I'm NHL to Seattle on the X.
And Curtis Isaacki. Hello, Curtis.
Hello, everyone. Deep Sea Hockey on X, formerly known as Twitter.
And we have a lot to talk about on this week's podcast. Oh, also follow us at @sound_hockey on X, and follow us on Instagram, and follow us on TikTok. And
who knows how long on TikTok.
Right. And join the Patreon. We're going to be recording a mailbag episode for Patreon listeners right after this. So now's your chance. Get on Patreon if you haven't already. Patreon.com/soundofhockey.
Yes. Correct.
But you can read lots of stuff on soundofhockey.com.
That's right.
Also. Yeah, it's going to be a good episode, though. We have tons to talk about, unpacking the locker cleanout day and the Ron Francis presser. There's a new TV deal that's happening that's getting announced. It will be announced by the time you hear this. What else?
Interview?
We have an interview, that's right, with Troy Bodie. So he is the VP of Hockey Ops and Business Ops, overseeing the Coachella Valley Firebirds. So he wears a lot of hats, a lot of fun talk about his career as a hockey player, but then also some cool stuff about what's been happening down in Coachella Valley this season and last season. So lots of good stuff.
Yeah.
Stick around. We were going to do like a post-mortem on the team that Curtis actually spent some time putting together. We're going to save that for next week, because we ended up with a lot of stuff to talk about this week that needs some attention.
Yeah, just too much going on. But come back next week. We'll be digging into it. Don't worry.
That's a good way of describing a postmortem.
Indeed. We're going deep.
Yeah. I am a little under the weather. I'm playing hurt, which is, I think it's appropriate because it is playoff time. And this is what you do. As Devin Cooley and Joey Decord would say, nobody cares that you have a cold. They just want to know how you perform.
And we all die.
Can I do a quick, that's right. We all, hopefully not because of this cold, but
hopefully not.
Yeah. Can I just say a really quick get off my lawn? I'm not happy with the selection of Kleenex pocket packs that are out there. Because, you know, when you have a runny nose, you need to carry Kleenex with you, or facial tissue, I should say. I guess I'm agnostic to brand. But clearly, they're not a sponsor, but clearly the superior facial tissue is Puffs Plus with lotion. That's the only one that's like semi-comfortable when you're in this scenario where you have a stuffy nose. Those don't come in pocket packs, though. The only facial tissue that they sell in pocket pack form is like sandpaper. It's horrible. Why do we have to have the like gritty? It's like, what is the stuff like crepe paper? Crepe paper? That's what it feels like. You guys haven't experienced this when you've been sick?
You're kind of on your own here.
What?
Yeah.
You don't have strong opinions about the level of tissue that comes in pocket pack varietals?
Nope.
Wow.
I don't.
Okay. I guess I'm the only one.
Well, I mean, if you're out there,
I'm sure you're not the only one.
If you're out there and you agree with Darren, communicate.
Or you work in the facial tissue industry.
Either one.
It's a $1 million idea.
Communicate with us through a 5-star review and we'll read it on next episode.
There you go. Yeah, that's the only way that you can get in touch with us is by writing a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We do have one, by the way, which I'll share with you now. It comes from the Chad Was Here. It's actually very long, so I apologize, the Chad, but I'm going to cut out the beginning of it. You say some very nice things about us, which we appreciate, but then you say that
seems like those nice things were probably about John and me.
Yeah, we so lack a little bit
strategically
on,
cut it out.
We lack a little bit on ECHL. And mascots. Well, it's saying that the Chad is the unofficial sound of hockey representative for the ECHL and mascots.
Where is he located?
I'm not clear on that, but he is apparently an ECHL.
Wait, we are very pro ECHL.
We're pro ECHL. Yeah. We don't talk about it that much, which I think
lots
is fair.
Lots of Kelly Cup talk.
So here you go. So let's go. It's saying let's go way down in the farm sometimes, or way down on the sometimes forgotten farm. So instead of way down in the farm, since it's the way down
like
on the forgotten
feedback.
Farm,
yeah.
We're going to go, let's go down on the forgotten farm.
Whoa.
The Kansas City Mavericks are the ECHL affiliate. This is still the review. ECHL, I love how I was like, oh, I'm going to cut out the beginning of this to shorten it. Mm-hmm. And now I've talked for much longer than the review itself. They are the ECHL affiliate of the Seattle Kraken. They play in the Mountain Division that has two of the top five teams in the entire league, 28 teams in total. One of them being relatively close to Seattle with the Idaho Steelheads. And while Idaho is a very good team, no one is stacking up to Kraken affiliate Kansas City Mavericks this season. They are the winners of the Brabham Cup for best record in the ECHL. I think we might have talked about that. At least was in your Monday musings, John.
Yep.
In the ECHL this season with a 54-12 record. They locked up a playoff slot 2 months ago. Highlights include holding the new ECHL record for road wins in one season with 29 and having three different goalies with at least 16 wins this season amongst several other attributes. Time will tell if the curse of the Brabham Cup will continue or if the Mavericks will take home the notorious Kelly Cup. But the future definitely looks bright for the Mavericks moving forward. So bright that the Seattle Kraken have just renewed their affiliation for the next two seasons. He is actually a Rapid City Rush fan. While my team, the Rapid City Rush, just missed the playoffs, I will give a polite...
I think he
might actually be the mascot. No.
He's come up before.
Uh-huh.
Right, yeah, I remember.
Yeah.
And I remember it wasn't... Yeah. Yes, I remember.
Okay.
We do remember.
In news from Rapid City Rush is Keanu Yamamoto.
Yeah.
Finishing his second season with the Rush with 19 goals and 29 assists. His name should be familiar as he is the brother of Seattle Kraken's.
Yeah. Spokane's own.
Yeah. Hopefully there will be more updates on a variety of leagues moving forward from the pod. Until then, stick taps for Andy. Thank you very much for
Thanks, Chad.
Way down on the sometimes forgotten farm update, Chad. That was great.
Well, you know, the ECHL coverage took a hit when Colton Saucerman stopped playing in the ECHL.
Yeah.
Who at one time played on the Idaho Steelheads.
And was once mentioned every single week. Yes. So maybe not quite.
It's a different time. We might not have had a team to talk about that much. So,
all right. So we're going to jump over a couple levels up to the NHL because there was a lot to cover on the Kraken front this week. Obviously, they ended their season with a win over the Minnesota Wild. Do we want to spend the next half hour discussing that game or what do we want to do?
Just that Calgary won that same night.
Right, which locks up the eighth best odds in the draft lottery, which I believe puts the Kraken at a 6% chance of winning the lottery.
Yeah, correct.
Okay.
And that lottery is about 2 weeks away. So.
Okay. We also had the clean-out pressers. So the Saturday was like a whole bunch of players, and then Dave Hackstall spoke, and then Ron Francis spoke on Monday. I was actually not able to attend Monday, so Curtis went in my absence. Thank you very much, Curtis, for that.
Oh, of course.
That was wonderful. I'm really glad that we were able to have some Sound of Hockey representation there, even though I wasn't able to attend. But so I think obviously the biggest thing, and you can correct me if I'm wrong here, Curtis, because you were the one that was there for the Francis presser. But I think the biggest thing out of that is that he was asked very directly. This is Ron Francis, was asked very directly about the future of Dave Hackstall. And he gave kind of a non-answer, which was we're evaluating things in more words than that. But yes, John?
Yeah, I mean, I've watched it and read reactions to that. I think he said that he evaluates the season after every season and needs to do a comprehensive review. Now, to your point, you pointed out that last year's press conference, they did it together. I went back in season one. It was kind of a different because they had a COVID situation or people were still kind of wearing masks.
I'm pretty sure they did it together that
year. No, they did two different ones. Oh, so okay. Hackstall did do it with Ron Francis. Mm-hmm. But Ron Francis did another one like a day later, just him.
Interesting.
So it wasn't quite the same as the first season because Hackstall and Francis did one together a different day. So I do think they probably need to have these do a full analysis if that is true, if you take him for his word. I think it makes total sense that you do a thorough review. You need to have exit interviews. You need to talk to coaching staff, particularly when seasons don't go well, right? Last year is different, right? You make it to game seven in the second round, you know, odds are the coach is coming back. They still do an eval, but at the same time, like it's probably a little bit more of a checkbox that they're doing. So I do think people ran with it and kind of implying that, still in doubt. Like I felt like it was a little glorified headlines in a couple different spots across the board, not just.
What about on soundofhockey.com? What'd you think?
I thought
of that?
Yours was very level headed.
Hey,
yeah.
Thank you very much. And you're obviously not biased towards our platform.
No, not right? at all.
No, okay, good.
No, but I think you did a completely level headed approach and more reported exactly what it and didn't speculate too much. I mean, there's always a spot to speculate a bit when it deems it. And I think you were right on point there. Of course, it's not a glorified headline that gets clicks. So
it did okay.
It did do well. it was good. But I don't know. What's your take? What's your guys' take?
Yeah, my thought on it. I'll go first here, and then I'll hang up and listen, Curtis. But my thought on it is I don't really have a strong opinion, at least that I want to share publicly, I don't think, in terms of like if they maybe I do have a little bit of a strong opinion, but like should they fire Hackstall? I don't really want to say yes or no on that, but I do think that and I've said this already on the radio, if they're going to do it, they should do it now. Like this is when they should do it, because there's other teams out there or other coaches out there, I should say, that are going to be available, you know. And what is the other thing that could happen is that they could start next season with him, and then he's got this, like, you know, at this point, everybody's been talking about it. So it's like, I don't know. I mean, are you going to start the season with him knowing that any wrong step and he's going to go, right? Like, what does that serve
well,
your team?
Don't you think year two started the same way?
Yes, but they played pretty well. In
not out
two.
Of the gate.
Not like immediately.
Yeah,
but they
I know.
Were like 500.
I know, but
and
I'm
then
saying like
up.
Clearly it was fine in year two. Why would it matter if we do it year four?
Yeah, it's just, I don't know. It feels different now. It feels really different to me. I don't know why, but I mean maybe it's because it's been 3 years.
You've got a
years.
Different lens than I do, right?
Yeah.
Because you're kind of in the room. That said, I am not kind of in the room every day. So I might have another perspective that isn't necessarily right
yeah.
or wrong.
No,
it's
right.
just different. So yeah. Anyway, Curtis?
Yeah, the only thing I want to add is that I think it should be underscored that Ron Francis is just a very guarded speaker
yeah.
in mm-hmm. public. Last year, Dave Hackstall was there sitting next to him, but there were questions. The media always has questions about what's next for this player or what's next for this aspect of the team. His answers to those questions last year were the same. We're in an evaluation process. I feel like that's just what he says at this
yeah.
time of year, because he doesn't want to give anything away. So I think it is worth keeping that in mind. He is just, you know, as you described him in your article, Darren, he's a taciturn general manager. He's not going to say what he's really thinking. He's going to give you all the options, but he's not going to say what he's really thinking. And so I think the key here, the difference here is what you have both have mentioned. Dave Hackstall wasn't sitting there. So that invites the speculation.
The other thing that I thought of too yeah. is the inaugural season, he did show up at that press conference and say, before I start, I want to let you know that we had moved on from Andrew Allen, the goalie coach. Right. So
right.
I think that was another thing. Like, I think people came into that press conference being like, all right, here's where he's going to break this news that he's making a change. And a lot of people in that room may have already made up their minds that that's what was going to happen. and he didn't. And the question was, hey, what's his future? And there wasn't a hard, he'll be back next year.
Right.
Right. And anything other than that, and it's going to be, all right, well, that's how we're going to run with it then.
And I understand that. I kind of read it. My reading of the tea leaves was a little different. My just putting on my speculation hat. Ron Francis talked a lot about how he was happy with the performance of the defense. He was happy with the goaltending this season. But the offense was just not up to par, which we all know. But he hit those various points a couple of times at his press conference. And I think that implies looking at potentially a more targeted type of change rather than wholesale changes.
Yeah, so and you're thinking like the assistant coaches or something, maybe a specific assistant coach.
Maybe, or maybe it is talking with Dave Haxtell about, okay, the offense hasn't been up to par this past season. What is your plan for rectifying that? Yeah. And, you know, convince us you're the guy that can do that. Is that a change of coaching? Is that a, change in emphasis or scheme or something like that? I think those types of conversations might be happening. Some of the things that Dave Haxtell said at his press conference made me think that he's already had conversations with management, potentially with ownership. He said this one kind of offhand thing at the end of his press conference where he said, oh, maybe next year I'll give you guys all the starting goaltender.
Yeah.
Before the game.
A lot of what Haxtell said at his presser was in reference to like, here's how we're going to change for next season.
Which he should be doing. It isn't necessarily a guarantee he'll be back.
No.
But why would Dave Haxtell say, sure, I'll give you guys the information on starting goaltender next year, unless someone ownership level or manager level was like, knock it off. Why are you doing that? You know, you should be more open. These are the changes we'd like to see.
I think he might have been joking, though.
Maybe he's joking, but he might have been joking. And it was a question that was asked in a joking way, and he answered it in a joking way. But I don't know. There have been some things that he's said recently, you know, and complimenting the fans and things like that, where it seems like, I don't know, these conversations have clearly been happening behind the scenes. And which way it goes, I don't know. But.
I don't know. We'll see what happens. There are some interesting candidates that I think are going to be out there. Obviously, you know, if they decide to make this move, you have your Dan Bylsmas out there. I still think, I don't know if I've ever said this publicly, but Dean Evason, I think could be a candidate if they decide to make a move. A lot of conversation and speculation about Rod Brind'Amour. Who knows what happens with him? He's probably going back to Carolina, but who knows what'll happen there. Other things that came out in the press there were some, he did mention that Jordan Eberle had broken his hand early in the season, then played through it. That was in the fight with Logan O'Connor in that early Colorado game. That was kind of annoying because he had to quote unquote answer the bell, but then Cale Makar never answered the bell, right?
Boo that man.
Yeah, Vince Dunn said he's close to 100%. He didn't say what his injury was, but then 2 days later, Ron Francis said, yeah, it was his neck. So that answers that question, I guess. But that's a good sign. I think Dunn is close, and I think they were being very cautious with him there at the end of the season. Free agency, he talked about a little bit. He said that they're looking to hopefully get something done with Ellie Tolvanen and Matty Beniers. Interesting, I thought, that he sort of stopped short on Kyler Yamamoto, where he's like, well, he is Arbright, so I don't know. Like, we'll have to see if we want to qualify him.
And again, he said similar things about, you know, Ryan Donato and Daniel Sprong in the past. So it kind of squares with what we thought. I would imagine Yamamoto will probably be non-tendered.
That's what I think, too. Justin Schultz is a UFA. I asked him just what he thinks in terms of like his future. Didn't give any kind of indication that he's having like conversations with the team. I would have to guess that Schultz is probably moving on as well. He did have some good things to say, though. He's like, obviously, I love it here. I want to come back, but it's a little too early to even be thinking about what's happening next season. So that's that.
A couple things I want to call out from the Francis interview or the Francis presser was he did reveal that they were looking at some big things last summer.
Yep.
And specifically, it was around trades. I mean, we could probably speculate on a couple what that might mean, but he didn't say free agency last summer. So that might dictate what they might do this offseason as well. And they talked about the draft capital. He talked a lot about being very happy with this the prospect pool, but also stopped short and saying, hey, it's not a linear path. Like, there's still a lot of work to be done. But I did really appreciate him talking about that a bit. What are some other things? you know, he talked about being very happy with the defense. And that would imply, and in, I think he kind of mentioned Riker's progress and things like that. So that would imply that to what you just said, Schultz isn't coming back. But they're not going to be adding much defensively. They probably need to add a seventh defenseman unless Cale Flurry comes back.
I mean, I did kind of read it that way too. He seemed to suggest that defense might, there might not be a big add.
Kind of was pretty clear. He was happy with both goaltenders.
Yeah.
Implying no changes there. I mean, that's at least the plan right now. So.
So that is that. Just a couple of like sort of funny things that happened on locker cleanout day. We were all sitting down. So RJ from Emerald City very kindly bought a tray of sandwiches for everybody because we were all sitting there for like 4 hours. By the way, locker cleanout day is a little rough. You're like sitting there for so long, just, you know, and the players come and they talk for 2 minutes. And then you sit there for another 20 and then somebody comes out and talks for 2 minutes. It's like, it's a really long, slow day. But so kindly, RJ ordered us a tray of sandwiches from Jimmy John's, and we're all sitting there eating them. And just as we're all like halfway through these sandwiches, Oliver Bjorkstrand walks around the corner to give his presser, and he's like, "Oh, do you guys want me to come back?" Which I thought was really funny, like just very Oliver Bjorkstrand reaction to that.
That's just like, what I was gonna say. Yeah, so him.
Yeah, and we're like, "No, no, come on in." And he's like, "You sure?" And then we're all like standing there like eating sandwiches as he's answering questions. It's kind of funny. And then Dave Hackstall was presented with a Jimmy John's sandwich. Which was funny. Joey also said that he's going to put in some reps to try to score a goal next year, which I appreciated. So the other thing that we need to talk about is this new TV deal. So the Kraken are moving off of Root Sports. This is a big, pretty big deal, I think, and it is going to help Seattle reach a lot more fans and hopefully turn some of those casual fans into more diehard fans, because they'll be able to find the games without, in theory, without any real extra cost. They'll be able to now watch on either Kong or King 5, both of which are available over the air. So if you get an antenna, you can get these games. And that is for everything that's not being nationally broadcasted. So like your ESPN, your TNT games, anything that's being locally broadcast will be on either Kong or King 5. Most will be on Kong. And I think like 15 to 20 or something like that will be on King 5. What else do we need to share? So the other thing is for the streamers out there, they're also going to be on Prime Video. And so if you have a Prime membership, there's no extra add-on that you have to purchase. If you have Prime Video already, you're just automatically going to get access. I should mention that the viewing area is Washington, Oregon, and Alaska. So if you're in any of those three states and you have Prime Video, you will be able to get Kraken games through Prime Video.
Yeah, and the streaming options are actually going to be available on kind of other affiliates in Spokane and Portland, I believe. Right?
Yeah,
and
that
then
sounds,
and then they're
right.
Working on
TV options,
TV yes. to linear TV
yes,
options.
Yeah, that's right.
This is huge news,
I
right?
I think it
and,
is. Yeah,
and one thing that, you know, we talked about early in the season, and I'm sure there's plenty of fans that know this, is I think the production of Root and the people at Root puts on a good show.
Like 100%.
I think it could be better, right? More just, I think they would admit there's things that they could do better. But what Root did not do is help promote hockey and promote the Kraken. And the biggest blow is when Root moved to a more expensive tier.
On cable, yeah.
Yeah. And that was probably halved the potential market of people watching it. So I don't know the exact numbers, but we all know cable is decreasing, or traditional cable, and people are going to more linear packages on streaming like Hulu Plus and YouTube TV and stuff like that. So this is going to be great. And I think it puts a little bit more control inside the Kraken organization to promote a little bit better, a little bit more kind of robustly, if you will. So I'm excited, but I do expect some kinks along the way. This is a big undertaking that I think they understand it, but I'm excited about it, and hopefully it will be a new way to kind of broaden the fan base, because it's something I think they still need to do.
Yeah, one thing I do want to call out is that in theory there's probably some very good hockey people that might not have a job next year from Root Sports. So I do want to call that out. They've done a very good job, to your point, on the broadcast. So I've been just generally really impressed by that. I am curious, though, to your point on not really promoting it, where am I going to get my like Mariners updates about catchers and pitchers reporting
to camp
for spring training? Because I got that kind of news from intermission, so...
Yeah. Again, what I said about it'd be nice to give the Kraken a little bit more control of that content.
Yeah, but no, but seriously, I have been very impressed with the work that they've done. One thing on the on-air personalities, all the folks that officially work for the Kraken, which is your John Forslund, Eddie Olchek, Nick Olchek, Allison Lucan, JT Brown, they all actually work for the Kraken. So they're under contract for next year. They'll be there. On the flip side, folks that work for Root, so like some of the the hosts, like the intermission hosts, Piper is actually a Root Sports employee. They're all still Root Sports employees at this point, so we're not really sure what's going to happen there, but we can say that the folks that are Kraken employees will obviously be there.
You know what's not clear is like what the shoulder content looks like as far as the pregame and postgame. Mm-hmm. I anticipate some of that, but I'm excited to see what they come up with there too.
Yeah. So. And they're doing it all in-house. I don't know if that was clear. Whereas before it was all being produced, effectively being produced by Root employees. Now it's all going to be produced by Kraken employees. So, but they're going to be showing it on King and Kong.
And
Amazon Prime.
Prime, yeah. Video.
Let's go down on the farm. Moo! We already went way down on the farm, the ECHL.
That's right.
Now we're going down on the farm. Carson Rakoff and Caden Price have both signed their ELCs. No surprises, certainly on Carson Rakoff. I'll be honest with you, though. Caden Price has been flying a little under the radar for me. He's not one that we talk about often, but he had a pretty good year in Kelowna. Yeah, and he had 55 points as a blue liner. So
yeah, I think last week or the week before, you said you forgot the Kraken even had a player on Kelowna.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Did I say that on the podcast?
I think you did.
Yeah. Okay. Not my proudest. Yeah, not my proudest moment.
No, he has been flying under the radar, but you're right, solid season.
Meanwhile, the Firebirds, and we're going to talk about the Firebirds quite a bit here with Troy Bodie in a few minutes, but they're heading into the playoffs. So, Curtis, will you please explain what their situation is as they head towards the playoffs?
Yeah, the AHL playoffs are a bit of a hodgepodge, but in the Pacific Division where the Firebirds are, seven teams make the playoffs, and the highest-ranked team, which the team that won the division, which the Firebirds did, get a first round bye.
So seems like a good thing.
It is definitely a good thing. So they'll be off. They probably start up next week sometime, but they kind of skip over the first round. So yeah, get rested and integrate some new players potentially.
Love that. Riker Evans is going down to help on the playoff run. Andre Lashko, Caden Hamill, and Rakoff, we mentioned him. All three of those signed amateur tryouts, so they're going to be joining the Firebirds. We'll see if they play very much.
Yeah.
I remember last year they signed a bunch of guys to ATOs, and then they
They actually got into playoff games.
Yeah.
Only a couple.
Like a couple shifts, though, right? Yeah, like they didn't play a ton, obviously.
So, and I don't know if we mentioned this last week or not. I don't think we did, but David Goyette has joined the team as well, and he's already gotten into a game.
Cool.
So yeah, it very curious to see to what extent these guys get in. I think Carson Rakoff could. The other guys that we mentioned, Hamill and Loshko, seem less likely.
Yeah, they take kind of a black ace role where they... Yeah. Participate in practices, stay extra, get some extra work in with the staff, just be around the pro game a little bit, see what it's like, that kind of a thing. And to your point, yeah, a couple of them might
get. And we mentioned Dragosovic's down there too, right?
Yeah, he's been playing.
We talked about, let's see, draft position, lottery is locked in, just looking at my notes here. Okay, so looking a little farther down, what players are still playing, John, in like the CHL, for example, and I guess overseas too? There's still some Kraken players that are still playing.
Well, the only player left in the OHL is Ty Nelson, North Bay Swept Sudbury, which is Goyette's team. So he is advanced. In the WHL, the Furcus Circus moves on as they beat Swift Current, and Tyson Jugnauth, Portland beat Everett in four games.
Yeah, they swept him.
Yeah, so Tyson Jugnauth. So there's two players left in the WHL. And I know there's a big Liga update.
Curtis, for our favorite
team. Can you tell us about the Pelicans?
Yes.
Whoa. Say that again.
Can you tell us about Pelicans?
Thank you. There's no "the" in that.
Pelicans are in the Liga Championship, and Nicholas Cocho continues to draw all the starts for them and has been stellar. They are up against Tapara, which is, you know, I think was the best team in Liga this year, and watching them. Yeah, go ahead.
And bouncing around their website sometimes is so challenging to like figure out what's really going on in that league.
But it is.
Anyway,
it's
that's why I laughed. So,
But they're, you know, Pelicans have a shot. It's 2-1 right now. They're down 2-1. And the reason they're still in it pretty much is Coco stood on his head in this last game that went to double overtime, saved 30 of 31. The one he gave up was a kind of Joey DeCord special where he ventured out of the goal and the puck took a bad bounce. And
unnecessary.
But he was Joey DeCord the rest of the game as well. And
playing really well.
Yeah, playing really well. Nope, he didn't let any shots through when he was actually in the goal. So he had a great game.
I got a text from my Finnish correspondent.
Yes.
And he says, Finnish hockey media claiming Coco being the king for the finals. So kept Pelicans alive and to win game three.
King Coco.
He could
king,
very well be. He's
King Coco.
In the regular
the
season.
New king?
Could be good. Henrik was Swedish, though. Is Swedish.
Yeah, but the king.
Yeah.
He could be the king.
King Coco.
Yeah. Can't you just imagine the chant Coco?
Coco.
I mean, there's a lot of potential there.
Yeah.
We're a couple years away from that. We
are several years away. Yeah. Goalies take a while. But we do think he'll probably come stateside and play with the Firebirds next year. There's been rumblings about that. Oh, like cool. Grant Fuhrer has said it on the Firebirds podcast. I think Francis said it at the beginning of the year. So at least that was the plan at some point. But
he's been pretty hot. Would you say that he's been hot Coco?
Wow. Wow, I think even Allison would be proud of that one.
He's been hot Coco all year. Second in Liga in save percentage during the regular season. I think either third or fourth in the playoffs. So he's been playing great.
All right, as long as we're already down on the farm, let's get to our interview with Troy Bodie. We now welcome on to Sound of Hockey a very special guest. He played 9 seasons of pro hockey, including 159 NHL games with the Anaheim Ducks, the Carolina Hurricanes, and the Toronto Maple Leafs. He's also the former director of pro scouting for the Maple Leafs, and he now works for the Kraken as the VP of hockey and business operations for the Coachella Valley Firebirds. Welcome to the show, Troy Bodie, and thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me, guys.
We are excited to be chatting with you. I think the timing is pretty good with where your team down in Coachella is heading right now. I do want to start a little bit with like some career talk. I was doing some digging and some investigating on you here. I landed on your Wikipedia page, which is where most of my research for these interviews starts. Your photo, it appears to be one of you playing for the Ducks, where you're helmetless and gloveless, and I have to assume you might be on your way to the penalty box. What does that say about kind of your style as a player?
Very appropriate photo for any sort of media article, Wikipedia, anything like that. Yeah, I wasn't an overly talented player. I made my money hitting and fighting and grinding in the corner. So very apropos of me having a picture with no helmet and probably bloodied and whatnot. But it was a good career. I enjoyed every second of it. And, you know, it's just a blessing playing in the National Hockey League.
You're not bloodied. And actually, if I'm right, if it's just after a fight, you know, it looks like you're pretty well put together, all things considered. You know, I do think it's interesting when you look at your career, and I remember seeing you play a little bit, but, you know, thinking in terms of like just your statistics and whatever, you seem to be one of those guys that would play like some longer stretches in the NHL, probably belonged as an NHL player, but then you'd go to the AHL and play for like a long time in the AHL, and then you'd come back up for a full season. And the Firebirds, you guys have some players in that kind of position. You know, you're Devin Shore, John Hayden, Chris Drieger, that list kind of goes on. And I just wonder, is there, like, do you feel like you can relate to guys who are in that kind of situation? And if so, I mean, what are some of the unique challenges that those guys might be facing or that you faced when you kind of went through that?
Yeah, you know, I could certainly relate to a lot of the players we have in Coachella, just with the similar career paths. I understand a lot of things they're going through. You know, there's not one player down there that would rather be in the AHL than the NHL. That is the goal. And I make sure to relate to them that it's really all of our goals is not only for everyone, you know, players and staff to get to the NHL, but us as a staff, it's our job to get them to the NHL. And, you know, we're going to provide everything we can that'll help them get there, but also help themselves get there. You know, we've got obviously Dan Bylsma there, who's an award-winning NHL coach, Stanley Cup winner. You know, it's Stu Bickel, who's, you know, played in the National Hockey League. He's had a similar career as I did and a lot of these players did. And then Jessica Campbell, who perhaps doesn't have any of those qualities in terms of the men's hockey, but had a very, you know, prestigious career in the women's game. And then specializes in obviously her skating and skills background, but we really do a good job of really having a variety of things that the players can draw from and use those experiences, you know, to their benefit.
And so before you made it to the NHL, you obviously played in the Western League at Kelowna several years. I think you won a Memorial Cup with them as well. I always like to hear the stories about coming through Seattle, right, as a kid, yeah, when you were in junior. Like, what do you have any stories about? Do you remember much about coming and playing at Key Arena?
I remember quite a bit, to be honest. We were there. They weren't a divisional team, but they were a conference team. We go there, I think we went there 3 times a year. And then we've had some playoff battles with them as well. We had one really strange playoff battle where we started, I think we were the higher seeded team, so we got home ice advantage, lost the first two, went there, won the next two, came back, lost in our building, went there, lost in their building. And neither team had won a home game the entire series. And then we went back home going, it's game seven at home, we got to do this now. And we ended up winning. But I had a lot of great memories in Key Arena, obviously being such a big building, you know, an NBA facility. And as a kid, that was just cool in itself, being in a major league building, because mostly just playing in junior barns. But the ice was always tricky because it was basketball first, hockey second. But I can just remember the ice crew coming out on during TV timeouts with a fire extinguisher to shore up all the holes in the ice and whatnot. And I'd never seen it before. And really, I haven't seen much of it since. But guy would just walk out, and a guy and girl, they'd walk out with their overalls on and coveralls, and they'd have a fire extinguisher just blasting away at the ice. I thought it was hilarious.
Oh, wow.
That's a sign of a good ice sheet when you have to take the fire extinguisher.
Yeah,
to
it's
it.
Quality stuff.
Yeah, it's amazing how far that building has come. And I know it's a kind of a totally different building now. But, you know, I went there. I haven't lived in Seattle my whole life, but I went to Key Arena once and I was like, wow, this place is on its last legs here. And seeing what they've done with it now is pretty unbelievable. So do you spend much time at Client Pledge these days, or you spend most of your time in Coachella?
I'm mostly in Coachella. That's my day to day down there is making sure everything's going on there. But I come up for, you know, scouting meetings and free agency development camp, training camp. So I'm up there at least 4 times a year. I make sure to get over there, you know, every time we have a game there. And then, of course, whenever I can, I get over there and watch a concert as well. And I'm just blown away at what was done with the old Key Arena. Obviously, I don't even want to call it a shell of itself. It's just the roof.
Yeah.
But, you know, it is just an unbelievable facility top to bottom. And the fact that they fit so many seats and made it so tight and it's so loud, and I would die to play in there now.
Nice. This might be a deep cut, but in my research, it appeared you played some preseason game with Winnipeg. Is that accurate?
That is accurate, yeah.
And it happened to be the first game where the return of the Jets?
It was the very first exhibition game in the arena with the Jets, yes.
Wow. And as being from Manitoba,
yeah,
what was that experience like for you?
Honestly, it was unbelievable. You know, I was without a contract that year, having played in Carolina the year before and Anaheim the year before that. So I went in there on a tryout, and they were in need of some toughness, just how the summer had gone. And I thought, okay, this is a great opportunity for me. And then and it wasn't so much of like, hey, I'm going to choose Winnipeg because, you know, I'm from there. It was kind of the only opportunity. So I went in there and I actually played really well, scored a couple goals, had a couple fights. I thought I did had a really good training camp. And then for whatever reason, you know, it was the very first year of their existence there. They want to go in a different direction, and looking at where their team is right now, I think they've done pretty well.
Yeah.
You know, that
must have been just an incredible experience though, right? Like being, were you a Jets fan growing up, or were they?
I was a huge fan of Jets 1.0 and, like, you know, team with Solani, Nikolai Habibulin, Alexei Zhinov. I could go down the list, Tempo Newman, and those types of players were just my idols growing up, and you know, being able to watch them. And then when they left, I was just heartbroken.
Yeah. Yeah. I can imagine.
It's very, an apropos conversation to be having with what just happened between Arizona and Utah. And do you remember much about, like, it's so fascinating that John happened to land on that. Do you remember much about the sentiments of the more, I guess, the more solidified players that had just moved from Atlanta, like what they were going through as they jumped from Atlanta to
Winnipeg? You know what I mean? Like, did you get anything from those guys that were there at the time?
I mean, I don't remember anyone saying anything negative about Atlanta, the situation there. I think everyone was pretty excited to just start fresh and start new in Winnipeg. And mm-hmm. Winnipeg was just elated to have their team back. And I remember going out for warmups that very first game, and the place was sold out, of course. It's not a huge building, but it was sold out, and everyone was in their seats cheering as loud as they can for the moment we stepped out for warmups.
Yeah.
That always will stick with me. And I was just so happy that the team was back and the city had a team back. But like you said, with the Arizona-Utah situation, I can't imagine what the players are going through. It's got to be tough to be moving like that, though.
Yeah, we've heard similar things from Kraken players about, you know, the first game for preseason, hearing the fans come out and cheer during, you know, during warmups and all that. So, but yeah, mm-hmm. very interesting stuff. So eventually, obviously, you have to kind of hang it up and transition into more of this front office role. I know you did the pro scouting thing first. At what point did you start to think it was right to hang it up, and what kind of led to that? And then was it always that you were going to stick with the game, or did you think about doing something else at any point?
Yeah, I mean, the last year I played, and you kind of alluded to it of like, you know, I played in the minors for a while, and then a good stretch in the NHL, and then back to the minors, and then a good stretch in the NHL. And then this was like another stretch in the AHL. And I kind of saw where the game was going. It was getting faster and less of the toughness. And my game was going a little south too. I was 30 years old. And I never wanted to be a player that just played until they tore the skates off me. Like if I was playing in the NHL and I was on, you know, game 1100 of my National Hockey League career, yeah, I'd play until they tore the skates off me. But I never wanted to be that in the minor leagues. And then, you know, my wife and I had our first child. We were expecting that season and end up having our first child after that. I just knew I didn't want to bounce around the minor leagues. She was starting her career in Los Angeles, and I just really wanted to be more there for the family than I could have been, you know, bouncing around the road. So
makes sense.
That was kind of why I decided to hang it up. As for the career choice of playing or of joining the other side of it, I really didn't know what I wanted to do at all. I had no clue. I just knew I wanted to be kind of home in Los Angeles and figure it out from there. And I asked for a scouting job the day the season ended. I made my decision. And, you know, Kyle Dubas, you know, the assistant GM in Toronto at the time, you know, just said, well, we have an opening in that Southern California region for a, you know, regional pro scout that this might work out. So ended up working out. And as soon as I got back into scouting, I just realized, you know, as much as I was done playing, my love for the game didn't change. And I just wanted to stick with it and really enjoyed it and kind of worked my way up from there.
How was that transition? Like, I always think about how you had to evaluate talent differently, essentially from the press box, right? Did you always have a knack for that? Like, did you do that a little bit as a player, like kind of keep an eye on certain things, or was it kind of a new skill set you kind of had to learn?
It was absolutely a new skill set. I wasn't one of those guys that really evaluated their players or really noticed a lot. I was so in tune with my game. And I think I was always, you know, just programmed just as a player to, you know, worry about your own game and just play your best. And that's kind of all you can do and not worry about anything else. So I never did. And I had no problem kind of learning. It took a little bit, of course, but had to learn, you know, how to scout. But I had to really learn the defensive position. You know, I had to, it was like a crash course and to learn how to really evaluate the finer nuances of a defender, you know, having a good stick, same good gaps and, you know, responsibilities in the D zone, stuff like that. And then the goaltending position, I don't think anyone's ever figured that out. So
yeah, nobody ever, even the goalie scouts.
I always say the more I learn about the goaltending position, the more questions I have. So
Darren's a goalie.
I am a goalie. I don't, I haven't figured it out myself. So it's a very confusing position. It takes a real strange human to want to do that. Although, you know, in today's game, like with shot blocking being such a big thing, you know, I would have never wanted to block a shot, especially the kind of shots that NHL players and AHL players are blocking wearing regular player equipment. So maybe the goalies are the smart ones. I don't know, but,
Yeah.
But, you know, one thing I think about too, is your role that you've kind of grown into here with the Kraken and with Coachella Valley it's really interesting to me, and you talked about that new skill set there with the scouting side of things, but your title, you have both business ops and hockey ops in your title, and those to me, I imagine them being very different worlds, very different, again, skill sets, right? What led to that, I guess, to you being in that position where you're overseeing that much of what's happening in Coachella Valley?
Yeah, you know, it was a transition, obviously, from Toronto to Seattle, and I had a previous relationship with Ron Francis, you know, going back to my days in Carolina, where he was assistant coach. And that's kind of how we knew each other there, and wow, you know, why he kind of chose me to join this position. I don't exactly know, but I'm very grateful. And as soon as I, you know, heard the opportunity, I was grateful to have it and join up. And it was a good next step in my career. I always wanted to be on the management side of a team and really have my hands in on the team and whatnot. And you know, it's been super rewarding, really kind of building out Coachella right from the get-go here. You know, even, you know, our very first year not having the team and watching the arena get built and you know, outfitting everything, you know, in the locker room and stuff. It was really rewarding, just really being there from the ground up.
And it exceeded your expectations, right? I mean, like, this has been an incredible two seasons.
Absolutely. You know, you never know what you're going to get. I always said the very first year, I said, we're going to have some older players because we just don't have those young prospects yet coming through. I think we had Riker Evans and Ty Cartier and Luke Henman, you know, for younger players. And the rest were kind of older players. So I knew we were going to be good. I mean, making it to the finals and, you know, game seven and whatnot and being one goal away from winning the whole thing. That's maybe a little more than I had really planned for, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty impressive what you guys have done. And you do have your hands very much on the prospects down there, too, for the Kraken. And, you know, there's been a few debuts here these last few months where Ryan Winterton made his way up to the NHL and Logan Morrison was here for a few games. Obviously, Shane Wright. John was saying how rewarding it must be. I wonder, is there sort of like a... almost like a proud father. Like, do you feel that a little bit as you see guys making their NHL debut after seeing what they've been going through in the AHL?
Honestly, those are the exact words I'd use. It's kind of like a proud dad moment. Like, you know, I haven't been around when we first, you know, Shane had already played when we called him up from Coachella. He'd already played in the NHL. When Ty Cartier got his first call, I was out of town and Dan did that. Same with Ryan Winterton. No, Ryan Winterton, I think it was over the phone. We had to get him on a plane right away, something like that. But Logan Morrison was the one where, like, he was in the arena and it was a day off and it was going to be a flight. I think that night we called him in and me and Dan just had a talk with him and he did not see it coming at all. And, and like, we told him and he was just taken aback. And then he could tell he's kind of cracking at his voice. And then I kind of almost started cracking and, you know, and
yeah,
almost tearing up and I'm just going, oh my gosh, this is special. But I just think back at the very first time I was ever told and how special that was. And it's really, really exciting, you know, being able to tell a player his dreams coming true.
Yeah. You know, I actually was in the room with Logan when he got here to Seattle and he told his side of that story, which was that, yeah, he was there. I think he said he was there for treatment or something, but it was a day off. He wasn't really supposed to be in the arena and he got called into the office to talk to you guys. And he was like, uh-oh, what happened? Right? Like, yeah. He really had no idea that it was going to be that kind of news. So yeah, that's pretty cool stuff. Speaking of Shane Wright, so I was down there for a game maybe a month ago in Coachella. And I was really impressed. And obviously we saw it when he came back up to the NHL, but it seemed like there's just something different in even like how he moves out there. Like he just has taken such from my untrained eye. It seems like he's taken such literal strides. Like his skating stride is faster. He's more patient with the puck. He's flying through the neutral zone. Like have you seen that kind of development from him this season? Is that just like, am I just being biased because he came up and scored some goals in the NHL, or has he really changed that much from watching him?
Well, absolutely. I mean, I think what was lost on most people with players like Shane is that he's barely 20 years old.
Right.
Like, I mean, I think he turned 20 in January. You know, he played in the National Hockey League as an 18-year-old and everyone's waiting for him to just take the team over and this is my team. I was fourth overall. I'm going to win us a championship. And it's like, he's a child. Like, you know, as much as he's a high draft pick, he's still a young man. And, you know, he came up and, you know, played those 9 games last year. I thought he did very well, but, you know, the NHL was still a little bit much for him. And then, this year he came in, played with us, played a few games in Seattle, but we just saw, you know, a gradual progression of him, like figuring out kind of how good he is and really understanding that he can take over games when he's able to. And it's just, you know, it's just a natural progression of a young player to kind of understand how to use their skill sets and really, you know, gain that physical strength too. You know, he was, for most of the season, he was 19 years old practicing against guys that are in their 30s, and just physically on a younger man, it's difficult, let alone mentally and, you know, understanding the speed of the game. But practicing and playing at our level here in the AHL is, you know, it's just an excellent breeding ground for these young players to get up to speed. And Shane's taken full advantage of every opportunity he's gotten, you know, down here on the ice, in the gym, you know, with the coaches and all that. He's a dedicated young man. And I don't want to say I was surprised when he went up there and scored some goals, but, you know, to see him progress as quickly as he did and to be able to do that, I was very, very excited that he had really went over there and took over some shifts out there.
Yeah, he did. He really did. And it was an impressive step. And I have to think that Jess Campbell has been helping him quite a bit too. And I can't wait to see what her influence is on some of these other guys coming into the system. You know, your Carson Rakoffs, your Yanni Newman, who just got there. And so it's an exciting time, I think, to be a Kraken fan, no question. But, you know, talking about that commentary we had earlier about, you know, me being down there for a game and seeing what it was like. One thing that really stuck out to me was, A, the arena is so cool because of the outdoor-indoor thing. I've never seen anything like that, and I just think that's the coolest thing in the world. But seeing the people there who, A, I mean, the arena was, like, pretty full. It was people that I assume have not really been exposed to hockey much at all. And they're all dressed head-to-toe in Firebirds gear, and they're, like, diehard fans. And when I think about like a true, you know, it's a minor league team, and to see that kind of passion and excitement from a fan base that has probably never seen this sport before, I thought that was pretty incredible. And I'm wondering if you can just kind of touch on what you've seen and what it means to that community down there, this team being there.
Yeah. I mean, we had a lot of, you know, snowbirds, as we call them down there, of, you know, Northerners that come down, and they're very hockey educated. And then we had a large group of people have never been inside an ice arena. And it's been such a great mix of everyone just coming together with hockey in the Valley. And you see it at the rink, but you see it all around the Coachella Valley of, you know, people just rallied around the Firebirds. And I hear it countless times around town of just people going like, you don't understand what this arena and what this team has done for us here. Like, they didn't have any sort of pro sports. They didn't have really any, you know, big shows or anything like that come in, and now they all feel like they have a team to rally around. And I thought it was really special as last year when we went so far in the playoffs, a lot of the snowbirds had gone home to start their summers, you know, where they are, you know, from up north. But, you know, some of them had come back and gotten playoff tickets, and which they weren't planning on doing. And then a lot of the locals who, you know, stay there all summer long, you know, grew up there, whichever, you know, they are the ones that really filled the rink. And you know, we created a whole new fan base just from the playoffs, I feel. And it's been pretty cool to watch.
Yeah. Well, it's been fun to watch from afar as well. We're out of time, so I won't take any more of your time. But before I do let you go, what are the prospects of the Firebirds here heading into the playoffs? How are things looking right now? Really quick, just state of the Firebirds.
Yeah, you know what? We've got some good young kids. I don't want to say anything. I don't want to just point out the young kids. Obviously, the veterans have been fantastic, obviously, with Max McCormick, our captain, leading the way. But you know, we talked about a lot of the young players, you know, Shane and Logan and Ryan Winterton. but also some players that we haven't seen yet up in Seattle with, you know, Jacob Melanson and Ville Odevainen,
right,
players like that, Tucker Robertson. It's been great seeing kind of all those players come along in their seasons and really how they've helped and figured out just kind of what their role is here and where it's going to be at the next level and the progressions that they've made. So if you're watching, I'd watch out for those players, and it's an exciting time right now. So yeah.
Awesome. Well, Troy Boddy, thank you so much for your time today. We've kept you for far too long here, but we really appreciate it. It's been great chatting with you. And go Firebirds. This should be a fun run here. I'm excited for it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it'll be a lot of fun. Thanks for having me, guys.
All right.
Awesome,
cool.
Troy, thanks.
All right. Thank you, Troy, for that great interview. I really enjoyed that conversation. And, you know, I really love talking about the passion of the Coachella Valley fans. I think that brings a little glint to the eye of everybody who is involved in that. It's such a cool thing.
It's definitely a very positive thing in this entire organization that they should be really proud of.
They've also built a whole hockey market down in the desert in California. Yeah. So,
I mean, we were there for a Saturday night game this year, and it was fun.
Yeah.
That place is buzzing.
All right, let's play a really quick game. We're running long, so sorry, everyone. You're going to have to just stick with us here. But we're playing a game that I haven't told John and Curtis about yet, but we're calling it Rooting Interests, okay?
Okay.
And this is how we're going to very quickly cover what's happening in the NHL playoffs. And we're not really going to cover it at all. You guys can find that info wherever you want.
And it won't be current by the time.
Here's what we're
going to
do, okay? I'm going to name the two teams in each series. And we're all going to count to three, and we're going to say which team we find ourselves rooting for.
Okay.
Because I guarantee that all three of us have like a slight bias when we're watching these games, at least.
Okay. I gotcha.
Fair enough. Yep.
Okay. First series, the Stars against the Golden Knights. On the count of three, you're going to just say either Stars or Golden Knights. Okay. Ready? One, two, three.
Stars. But I hate myself.
All three?
Yes.
Yeah. The Golden Knights are so unlikable.
Yeah.
They're so unlikable. And now that Mark Stone,
I know, but I find myself, you know, I see Jamie Benn skate around, and I doubt myself.
Yeah, yeah.
They do have a lot of likable guys too, though.
It's true, they do. We don't count the Bang guy in that category.
Bang guy can go.
Yeah, we can lose him.
We're good.
Although apparently he can't hold his sign anymore. Which is great news.
Wait, because he's not allowed to?
He's not allowed to, apparently.
Oh, I thought he has like an injury or something.
Oh, okay, sorry. No, his arms work fine, as far as I know.
Next one, Jets Avalanche. One, two, three, Jets.
Avalanche.
Go ahead. You're wrong, but go ahead.
I love watching Cale Makar play.
Yeah, there's some fun players.
There's some players on the Jets. I forget how good the Jets really are.
Their top six forwards are really good.
Yeah, and it's not just Hellebuck. It's even Morrissey's like, he was dancing around the blue line the other day. I thought that was fun. So
the Jets, ironically, they're called the Jets, but they really fly under the radar very much.
Oh, hey.
I didn't even mean that as a pun until I started to say it. But
I do love seeing McKinnon play against another team, though. He's one of my favorites.
I still have residual hate for Colorado, but I also hated Colorado before the Kraken existed.
Right,
so next one, this will be an interesting one, I think. Canucks, Predators. Ready? One, two, three.
Predators.
Okay. What do you have to say for yourself, Dan?
I like Brock Besser a lot. Okay. I also, every time we've gone to Vancouver, which I've been up there a bunch of times now, I love the whole experience so much. And I've never been to Nashville, so I know that you have like some bias there. But yeah, mostly Brock Besser.
I love Vancouver, but the Canucks cannot lose enough.
Yeah, that's fair. That's fair. I know that they're a close, Oilers against Kings. One, two, three.
Oilers. Yeah.
Kings is yours, Curtis.
Wait, you two are,
I know.
Are
they're
rooting...
so fun to watch. They're so fun to watch.
There is no franchise that just gets me immediately. It used to be the Montreal Canadiens for me, and they still do it. But now it's the Edmonton Oilers. My thing about the Edmonton Oilers is, yes, they're fun to watch. As far as I can tell, they do not play hockey. They play power play.
Like the Harlem Globetrotters?
Yeah, they play power play where they have more talent than the other team. Otherwise, they stink, and I don't like them. They can
it is
get
interesting.
Off my lawn.
That's an interesting point because I've been thinking a little bit. We were talking recently, like how did the Kraken, like how is their power play so much worse than other teams? And man, the Kraken are so like structured and like you know exactly what they're going to do. The Oilers are just like,
Connor McDavid just skates wherever the hell he wants, and then he just makes an incredible pass, and then they score.
His skating wreaks havoc on the structure of the defense. Yeah. No, right?
So, like, you can tell how it works, and it's beautiful in its own way. I just, you know, for the history of the Kraken, they've not had approaching a star player.
Oh, really?
Much
they don't
less
have
a superstar.
Connor McDavid.
And so it's just frustrating to see a team that can just impose its will where it has all these glaring flaws. So I would like to see the Oilers lose.
Panthers versus Lightning. 1, 2, 3. Panthers. Yeah. Bruins versus Leafs. 1, 2, 3. Bruins. Leafs.
Okay. Okay, Darren.
I'm
what
not
are you doing
trolling.
Here?
I'm not trolling. I really hate Brad Marchand.
Oh,
I don't like him.
You gotta embrace. No, life is so much better when you embrace.
Well, you don't
Brad
have to. Embrace
I do like Morgan
him.
Geeky. I'll give you that. Yeah, but I also like Callie Yarncroft.
What about Charlie Coyle?
I liked him. I'm not like a huge Charlie Coyle guy anymore. Him. Can I say something a little wacky and out there?
Let's do it.
I kind of appreciate the like pageantry that goes with the Leafs. I don't know why that is. Like, I know that they're way overcovered and all that. Like, I can't stand the New York Yankees for that same reason, right? They get so much coverage. But the Yankees have also won over and over and over and over, not so much recently, but like over and over. And they always beat my Twins in the playoffs, right? So, like, I hate the Yankees. I've always hated them. The Leafs haven't won anything. So it's like, yeah, they get overcovered, and you know way more about them than you probably should without being like a Leafs fan. But there's something about it. Like, I love how much people live and die with that team, and they always end up dying.
You know what?
Sorry.
You know what I love?
We
is
all do.
That Toronto Square where all the fans are when they lose.
Well,
that square is a good time.
When they lose.
Yeah. it gets slippery from all the tears. Rangers, Capitals. 1, 2, 3.
Rangers.
Yeah, Capitals are totally unlikable too, aren't they?
It's not that much unlikable. They're just not very good. Yeah. I don't think.
Not interesting.
Just, they're not fun to watch.
Let's get the Rangers against a good team.
Yeah, I've always kind of liked the Rangers too. I don't know if that's okay to say, but
the
speaking of pageantry, right?
Yeah.
They were like my de facto team when I was a little kid.
Oh, okay. All right.
Yeah. Last one, Hurricanes against Islanders. 1, 2, 3.
Hurricanes,
I guess. Yeah.
You're too late on that one. You can't just go with us.
Okay, sorry. No, I have no feelings on that series.
And to be honest, I usually root for whatever team is down games.
Yeah.
Just to lengthen it and to kind of get closer to 7 to try to zero in on a game 7. So
they're way more fun though.
Yeah.
Hurricanes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, like but that. They almost lost game 2 or
for some reason I've never really liked the Islanders, even though they're kind of in that, like, I don't know, maybe because I kind of did like the Rangers.
They're boring to me.
Yeah, they've played that like intensely defensive style for too long. It's a reputation.
All right, that was rooting interest. What did you guys think?
I enjoyed it.
It was kind of fun.
Yeah. We'll do that every round.
All right.
Yeah.
That's a good idea, yeah. Moving on to weekly one-timers. Our first weekly one-timer, the Coyotes. I was sad.
Yeah.
I was genuinely really sad. I didn't expect to have an emotional reaction to this because I truly don't care that much. And I'm pretty tired of hearing about the Coyotes drama over the years. Like, it's been irritating. Watching all those fans cry in the stands because their team was leaving, it like brought back. I was really young. Like, I was 5 years old when the North Stars left Minnesota. But I remember being really upset with that and my family being really upset about it. And it is hard, you know, and I know a lot of people here have experienced that with the Sonics leaving. Like, it's not a nice thing for any team to leave a city. And it made me feel so, so bad for those people that have been through. So, you know, they've stuck with that team for all these years and all the different bankruptcies and all the, they're in
different owners.
Glendale. They're in, you know, they're moving around. They've never had a good arena situation. No. Even when they first moved there, they were playing in now they're going to Salt Lake, which has the same problem. They're playing in a basketball arena, right? So it's just, I felt for them. And it was really hard to, I found it hard to watch very much.
Yeah, it stinks. And like, for people that don't know, like, Arizona was rumored to move a couple times.
Yeah, including here at
one time. And I'll tell this quick story. There was an ownership group that wanted to purchase the Coyotes out of bankruptcy. And if they were to come available and move them to Seattle, and I was in contact with them. And literally I was watching a Glendale City Council meeting at like 7 o'clock at night and communicating with them via text as they were watching on the East Coast. And Glendale approved the arena deal that ultimately triggered the purchase of the Coyotes by the Fairway Group or one of those early owners. But so I feel like I've been kind of married to that franchise a bit, and I never rooted for them to move and relocate, but it was something I'd always keep an eye on. And it was pretty devastating to see that, because, you know, like it like you said, it's no fan base should go through that. I don't care how small it is. No. So pretty devastating, pretty impressive. I do want to say pretty impressive production commentary from the media crew. I watched the pregame.
Yeah.
And it was pretty incredible to see, you know, because Tyson Nash played down there and, you know, he's the guy between the benches, and there's a lot of, and they're sharing stories. It was pretty incredible. So I do hope, I think I said this last week, I do hope they go back. I do hope it's a different owner.
Yeah. But did you read Katie Strang's?
Not yet.
It's a banger. She's already torn him down pretty.
Yeah. I was just going to mention that. She talked with, you know, the board of governors, and there isn't a single one who thinks that Maruelo is going to get this deal done to come back, even where he's got, you know, hundreds of millions in his pocket to upfront finance this thing. But it might be, you know, local opposition and things like that. I mean, he's just got some issues.
Yeah. Meanwhile, the players and staff all arrived in Salt Lake City on Wednesday and did like a meet and greet kind of a thing. And they had a fully arena. That was pretty cool. Yeah. I was impressed by that. And we've gotten a list of potential names, which everyone loves a good hockey name conversation. The Utah Mammoth, these are the trademarks, right? That were filed, I think. Yep. The Utah Mammoth, the Utah Ice, the Utah Yetis, the Utah Venom, the Utah Fury, the Utah Blizzard, the Utah Outlaws, and Utah Hockey Club.
Okay, which one do you think it will be, and which one should it be?
I think the answer to both is Utah Yetis.
Mm. You think that'll be the name this season?
No, not this season. Okay. I'm not convinced they're going to have a name this season.
Yeah, so it'll be Utah Hockey Club probably this season. Right?
Maybe, yeah.
Yep. Okay.
I don't like a lot of them. I'd say...
Some of them are really bad.
I'd say Utah Blizzard.
Okay. I can get around that one. It sounds like a nice, tasty treat, but...
It snows a lot in Salt Lake.
Well, so, I know that, but I also enjoy a Snickers Blizzard. What's your Blizzard of choice?
You've never had one? I've had one, but not in 20 years, probably.
I mean, Snickers Blizzard, you just said it. I mean, I can't think about anything else now. Yeah, it's good. Pretty good.
Do they have like Reese's and
stuff?
They
do.
Yeah. That'd probably be my...
Yeah, Dairy Queen, they're not a sponsor.
Should be.
Too much free advertising.
We'll take their money.
Meanwhile, yeah, I think that's... No, there's no meanwhile there. That's pretty much it. Our next weekly one-timer. Whoopsh, David Quinn was fired by the Sharks, which I guess isn't that surprising. You know what's interesting? I heard him in a couple press conferences post Kraken games this year, and he would like rip into that team. Like, oh, just terrible performance. We weren't ready. Like almost kind of sarcastic. I'm like, wow, he really tears these guys down considering they're clearly the worst team in the league.
Yeah, the team's not that good.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah, seems like it was a bad situation this year, but I mean, he accomplished pretty exactly much all the Sharks could accomplish, which is highest lottery odds for Macklin Celebrini. Yeah. So job well done. Here's your walking papers.
Other side of the coin, Lindy Ruff was hired by the Buffalo Sabres, so he's back.
Fancy that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Feels like a Terry Pegula hire.
I'm like, what? I'd be curious. I don't know any Sabres fans, but I'd be curious what their reaction was on that. Just like...
I know, I play hockey with a couple.
Yeah.
I'll report back.
Okay. Yeah. Let me know. Because if it were me and I'm like, how long has it been since Lindy Ruff coached there? Like 10 plus years, probably?
Yeah, but like it's not like he's been out of the league. He was just
no, I know, but it's like really like that's the like hope for the franchise is we finally got this guy back that I don't know. Anyway, our next weekly one timer, Marc-Andre Fleury signed a 1-year extension with the Minnesota Wild, so he'll be back. He did say that next year will be his last year. next year will be his next year.
Next year will also be his next year. Yes.
Yeah. So there you go. He'll play one more year. I'm sure it'll be a whole
played pretty well this year, right?
Yeah. He did. Yeah.
If it is, in fact, if he sticks to that, that'll be a pretty epic farewell tour.
Wait, who will be the other goalie there?
Philip Gustafson.
What about that other guy, that prospect they have?
Wallstedt. Yeah, maybe they'll make a trade. I don't know.
Okay.
I'm pretty sure Gustafson, I think he's still under contract. So. Okay. I had a nice chat with Marc-Andre Fleury this year. It was really fun.
That must be incredible.
It was pretty cool.
I know. That's pretty awesome. Cool. Yeah.
Just me and him, just having a nice little chat. Yep. We talked about singing songs during games because that's something that he and I both do. So.
That's awesome.
That was pretty cool.
Yeah.
Our next weekly one-timer. A few retirements. Jeff Carter is retiring. That's a heck of a career for Jeff Carter, huh? Jacob Voracek, who didn't actually play this year, and then Zach Parise, who is still playing for the Avalanche currently, but all three are going to hang it up.
I have a quick story on Jeff Carter. I remember watching games when, I think when he was in Philly, like watching playoff games with a buddy, and he used to just rail on Jeff Carter. He's like, he sucks so bad. And he went on to have like 12 goals that playoff. And I'd text him every time he scored a goal. So, but he ended up with like, I think almost 1,300 games and like over 400 goals, 400 assists. Incredible career.
And Zach Parise, well, it's interesting. I was a big Zach Parise fan when he was with the Wild. And actually, that year that they signed Parise and Suter was like the absolute peak of like Wild excitement.
Like, holy crap, they're finally going to do it.
They're a real franchise now. Yeah. Like, this is going to be incredible. And actually, that first year, they really did like jump into legitimacy.
Yeah.
And I think that was the year they might have beaten the Avalanche, then lost in round two, maybe. And then they just never quite got where they wanted to go. So. Our last weekly one-timer, Thailand defeated Kuwait 57-0 in the U18 World Championship qualifiers. So,
like Div 3 or 4 or 5 or something like that.
That's tough. 57-0.
It's tough.
Yeah, just a couple bounces. Yeah, no, never mind. It was a blowout.
I saw like a couple clips online. It was
not good.
Yeah, that's tough. That's real tough. Those are our weekly one-timers. We close the show with our tweets of the week. Curtis, your tweet of the week.
All right, mine's a quote tweet. Paul Bissonnette says, "I vote Utah Yetis, and the team mascot would be incredible and 20 times cooler than Sea Buoy."
Oh.
So Bowie quote tweets that in response and says, "I vote it's the Utah Mammoth so that the cast of Ice Age is nearly complete." And it's a picture of Paul Bissonnette with like one of the characters from Ice Age looking very similar. It's like,
so are we implying that Paul Bissonnette is in fact a mammoth?
Well, no, he's...
Because he's next to a sloth, right?
Yeah.
A sloth. What is that thing? It's like a, I don't know what he is.
I think it's just a way to make fun of what Paul Bissonnette looks like. But yeah. But no, it's referring to the movie Ice Age, which I cannot say I've actually seen. For all my Daddington Island ways, I don't think I've actually seen that one.
Guys, I have bad news to share with you.
Uh-oh.
Golden Knights are about to win game two. So.
Yeah.
It's not ideal.
John? Tweet of the week?
I do not have one.
Okay. Mine is from Greg Wyshynski, friend of the pod. It was a retweet of Jesse Granger's line rushes ahead of game one, which of course included Mark Stone. And Greg Wyshynski retweeted with just an image of like something that a very religious person would tweet. And it's just a sky, like a sky with a bright sunshine. It just says, "He is risen."
He was the first goal scorer in that series.
He sure was, wasn't he?
And, yeah. Oh, I wanted to mention this. John did some work on the cap
Sour
situation,
cap. Yeah.
Like what the annualized cap hit of the various playoff teams would look like. And, you know, based on your research, if the league did want to go to a model where you could only put a team on the ice in the playoffs if the players on the ice, their annualized cap hits would be under the cap. If that was the rule, and that's been, it's been at least discussed, they're only slightly over that. They're like $200,000 over that cap or something like that. So for all the talk about...
Wait, Vegas?
Yeah, for the team that, as you found it, would be on the ice was 83.7.
Yeah, but that's only
cap.
20 players, right?
But I thought that was that's the proposed rule. It's like the...
No, 23 would be the...
Oh, you'd have it all 23.
I mean, something like that. I don't know.
Well, in any event, like they could essentially field the team that they're using right now almost within the salary cap. Yes, maybe they're benched players they'd have to make inactive or something like that. But I just mention it for all the discussion about how Vegas is.
And they weren't the only team either.
Quote unquote,
right?
Cheating.
Yeah.
Right. They're really not. The roster they're deploying is, yes, they've used a lot of salary retention and they've got a lot of good players. But,
I think it's just too much of coincidence that it seems to be Mark's. I know that he legitimately was injured. I get all that.
I'm with you on that.
It's just so, ugh.
There's no reason
wow.
to like
just
the Vegas
in time.
Knights.
Just in time.
Did
he's
they win?
Able to go, you know?
Did they win?
Yeah.
They
yeah.
Won. Oh.
Nice. Anyway, that wraps up episode 284 of the Sound of Hockey podcast. I'm not going to sing this week because I'm under the weather. So, and we'll just give our listeners a break from that because I think they deserve it. Yeah. Thanks everybody for listening. Thank you for subscribing on Spotify and Apple Podcasts. Leave your 5-star review on Apple Podcasts. We'll read it on next week's show. Thank you to the Chad was here for your great 5-star way down on the sometimes forgotten farm. What else? Subscribe to our Patreon, Sound of Hockey, the Patreon, patreon.com/soundofhockey, and stick around or be on the lookout, I guess, for a mailbag episode if you are a member of the Patreon. We will talk to you all very soon for episode 285. Cheers.